Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
Hello and welcome to episode number 37 of On Tap with Corey and Ira, your bi-weekly exploration and one-stop shop of all things Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Usually we like to stay in the wheelhouse of beer, but occasionally we like to take a departure, and this happens to be one of those episodes, though not completely a departure. It's a, we'll call it a collaboration, a collaborative episode. Ira, that's you. I'm Corey. I usually introduce ourselves, but I'm Corey, you're Ira. Ira, what the hell's going on today?
Yes, I am Ira. Yeah, and so we are about to head over to Tillion Brewing and meeting up with our guest for the show, which is Cannon Bell Cheese. So yeah, it's a little bit of a departure, but talking a little bit of craft cheese and kind of the fun that's going on over there in Cannon Falls. So if they're based in Cannon Falls with the cheese and there's beer there, why not do it? So it's going to be fun heading over there, meeting with those ladies. And of course, later we'll have Andrew on with a style of the week, talking a little smoked porter. Interestingly enough, we're actually sharing a Rausch beer, a smoked beer from Giesenbräu. So good talking point for today.
Yeah, we'll get back to that beer quick, but I want to mention we are recording at Tillion Brewing. Chris, the head brewer there, is going to be sitting in with us because, and you kind of buried the lead on here, it's a collaboration because we're going to be doing a pairing show of some sort. So we have this idea of how this will turn out. We'll see how it goes because, like you said, we're recording this before we head over there. I'm sure in the end it'll be fun. We don't really know what to expect. I'm not sure if our guests know what to expect, but we're going to talk cheese, we're going to talk beer, and how best to pair them. We're going to pair what Tillion has for beer. We're going to pair what Cannon Bell's has for cheese. So hopefully we find some things that work there. I'm sure it'll be fine. But it's kind of a fun little detour for us.
Well, I've liked both of their items on their own. You know, the Cannon Bell's cheese is very good. You know, I'm more familiar with just their cheese curds, though we'll talk about it during the interview. But we found out recently a couple places using Cannon Bell cheese in the restaurant and stuff. And then, of course, we're big fans of Tillion and everything they're doing over there. So the combo should be fun.
Yeah, we've talked about food pairings on the show before, and I think the world's starting to embrace, at least the U.S. is starting to embrace more and more the idea of beer and food. Clearly, people have been eating food and drinking beer together for a long time, but actually trying to find things that complement each other. You've seen this with wine forever, and beer is kind of getting to that elevated stage now where people are doing the same, and we see that represented in restaurants and breweries and tap rooms throughout the state now and throughout the country, of course. But you're seeing more tap rooms open up with at least a little kitchen, if not a full kitchen, like a Tanzenwald, not even the brew pub style of operation, but where it's a full-fledged brewery like Tanzenwald, and they happen to have a full-fledged kitchen. So you're seeing more of that because they want that complimentary atmosphere, and it's good to do that in the restaurant and brewery. It's also good to do that at home. So hopefully we play just even a small part of educating people with today's episode with just the introductory cheese and beer. And people can go with, I know you like to grill steak and have a good beer with that. And there's lots of combinations out there. So we're just going to kind of scratch the surface today, I think. And I should add that if you're listening to us live, that's great. We're on kymnradio.net. Also live on 1080 AM, 95 The One. We're also on podcast platforms. So if you're not listening on the radio live at this moment, you're probably listening to us on your computer or your phone or in your car or somewhere where electronic
or
devices.
Some piece of technology we're not even aware of yet.
You're listening on your toilet or through your refrigerator, something like that. You can find all those shows on ontapnorfield.com, including the show if you're listening to it, or on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Google Play, iHeartRadio, a number of places where we are available. Social, we got stuff on social, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, find videos, find photos, find updates of what we're doing, where we're at, who's coming up on the show. We've both posted recently because we've had separate visits to different places. You mentioned the smoke beer, the Rausch beer we're having right now because you got that at nearby Giesenbräu.
Yeah, got done with a graduation party and had a little bit of time before we had another event we had to attend, and so headed over to Giesenbräu, and Aaron was working, Aaron Hutton, head brewer there, and I went for one of his lagers right away just because I love his lagers, and very few breweries, at least close by, do a really good lager, and it's a nice German lager, so I started with that, and then tried this Roush beer, and then, of course, by the time you're done there, they have such a great deal, you know, three cannons for only $18. So grabbed a three-pack of those and headed out the door, and then we swung down through Montgomery on the way back and hit a food truck and had a beer there. And so nice little quick trip through two of my favorite breweries.
Yeah, and I got to do a little exploring recently. I was up in the cities, Minneapolis, that is. I'm starting to develop that Northfield twang where I'm like, oh, the cities, and I mean Lakeville or Burnsville. But this was actually Minneapolis, and got to visit a couple places. Checked out Prize Brewing, which is still relatively new in the last year. The beer's been around for a while, but the location, the tap room, beautiful tap room, is still pretty new. But the beer is outstanding. They do a really good job there. So I tried the new Northeastern or New England IPA and their Imperial IPA. So those were tasty. And then I went over to Head Flyer and had a couple beers there, including their Milkshake IPA, which I enjoyed very much. So it was nice to get up there and explore a couple places I don't get to go too often. I know we've been to Inbound and a couple other places recently when we went to the Twins game. So it's nice to go and get out of our neighborhood once in a while and check out what other people are doing. And you see this stuff online, all the different beers going out. And so I want to bring up the Northeastern IPA, the New England IPA, whatever someone wants to call it, but it's the NE IPA. And I was talking to one of my coworkers the other day about beer style she likes, and she said she likes the NEPA. And I said, you like the what? She's like, the NEPA. Everyone loves NEPAs now. I'm like, what are you talking? She's like, okay, I get the acronym. I've never heard it called that, though. Have you, Ira?
I have not. That's not normally in the wheelhouse of that I've heard, anyways.
Yeah, and I said, well, wouldn't it be NIPA anyway? But regardless, NEPA, NIPA, I'm like, I haven't heard. She's like, oh, yeah, everybody calls it that. So if you're listening to the show, send us a message on Facebook or Twitter. I want to hear if you've ever called it that or heard it called that, because I have not.
Even in a... If you're going to take it, maybe not even so much of an acronym, but start trying to pronounce it as a word, then we have a problem, because I before E, except after C, you know, then it doesn't even work at that level. So, yeah.
Well, I like NIPA, but I'm a word guy.
Yeah.
She said NIPA. I'm like, that doesn't sound right to me, but you can call it whatever you want. And she claims that a lot of people call it that. I'm like, is it the three people you drink with call it that? Because I know a few people in the beer industry, but I don't think I've ever heard it called that.
I've not heard that, but I will be going out west, as the show is airing, and hopefully going to be hitting several breweries in Montana. Maybe I'll look for the regional pronunciation there.
Of NEPA from the north? NEPA, yeah. From the northeast? What do you guys in the west call the northeast beer?
Yep.
Garbage. No. they may not like it.
Yeah, maybe not.
Well, you'll probably find a few lagers in Montana, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but we're hitting within... There's a walking tour in Billings, Montana, that has four breweries and two distilleries within a mile and a half walk. And our hotel is situated literally in the center of that walk. So it's a... Not that I'm planning to hit all of them, but it'll be a nice little...
Who are you kidding?
Yeah, nice little visit there. And then we're staying in Red Lodge, and I believe there's two there. And then even on our way back, we'll be coming through the Black Hills, and of course there's a couple in that area as well. So
I've never seen you stand down from a challenge. It's only six places, all within walking distance.
It's not so much myself, but maybe my wife might put the brakes on that one. But anyways, it'll be fun. I haven't been in Billings since I was a teenager, so it's going to be fun to get back out that way.
I've heard of Billings.
Yep.
I hope you enjoy it.
Also, a little bit of interesting local news for those that like to get beer to go. And so those familiar with the Northfield Dundas scene is everyone around here serves only growlers to go. But Chapel in Dundas is actually adding cannons in. So by the time you hear this show, cannons should be out for at least a week to maybe 2 weeks. So they're going to be pre-canning stuff. So if they're out, they're out. But they have a cooler right now as you walk in the front door, and that will be loaded up with growlers and cannons ready to go for a little quicker, easier sale. So for those that like a smaller size, because as we said earlier, we're enjoying a Roush beer from Giesenbroy, and it's in that perfect cannon size, which is a nice mix between a growler and a a pint.
A growlette.
Yeah. 750 milliliters, a little easier to transport. Cannons stay a little longer in the fridge. So those, at least in the local area, Chapel is joining the cannon wave, or if you want to call it that.
I like that. Just the little ripple. Well,
they're going to be serving cannons on the cannon.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah, it's a nice size vessel. It's about, 26 ounces or so. So it's good to split between two people. You get one of those growlers, that's a commitment if you want to drink it.
And you have to drink it a little bit quicker. So
yeah, I mean, you've got a day at most before it kind of gets flat. Not that neither of us haven't put down four pints in a sitting before, but a lot of times you don't want to, or you want to mix it up. So it's nice to have this option. It's more environmentally friendly. You can take it golfing or on the cannon if you want to go paddle down with whatever you're in, a canoe or kayak.
Well, or for those that like to, you know, have a little fun. I picked up a can koozie that fits a crawler. So, you know, Giesenbroy was selling a can koozie. So, of course, I had to get one. So
it's probably more ballpark friendly, too.
Yeah.
You wouldn't mind seeing these at the Dundas Dukes games.
Well, no, it will make it so that I'm not going to bring a growler down. But if there's a really good beer on tap, you know, outside of the short hop, which we already served down at the ballpark, be able to bring a cannon down isn't too bad of an idea.
Well,
either,
I was talking about fans, not you.
Oh, okay. All right, never mind.
You know, the people who come and watch the game.
It's all about me.
Well, of course. I mean, your name's in the show. So
yeah, of course.
Should be partially about you. So, well, my name's also in the show, so I'm going to say it's time to move ahead. We got a couple more segments to get to, including the great interview. Stick around.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us this week by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering is coming out of Deschutes. We've had a few of theirs before, but this is their Hophenge Imperial IPA, coming in at a toasty little 8.3 and a 70 IBU. This one's really an interesting beer. I actually kind of like it for multiple reasons. The flavor comes in. I know this is going to be a weird way to describe flavor, but it feels like it comes in low, bassy, a lot of low, big flavor to it. I think that's the hoppiness coming through and stuff. But I definitely like this beer. It's got a lot of flavor to it. A little surprised I'm not picking up the heat as much at an 8.3. I think I would be expecting a little more flavor to it. But definitely a very enjoyable beer. I mean, Deschutes is one of those ones that are obviously bigger beer. Sometimes I feel like they miss a little bit, but I think they hit the mark on this one.
Yeah, I find this to be pretty well-rounded. It kind of promotes the hop end and the bitterness on it. And that definitely comes through on the front end. I feel a little bit of that bitterness on the back end, but I think it's pretty well-balanced, actually. I get a lot of the hop that comes through. And at 8.3, it's not quite a screamer in the imperial sense, but, you know, technically it's there. So I think it's better balanced than what they're advertising it as. It's definitely, the hop is there, but I feel like I get a lot of that malt, too. So I think it's balanced. It's just a little more subdued, and I think that's okay. We've got a lot of beers right now that are screaming for the fences with bigger flavor, bigger hop, just any flavor that can get in there that's going to just, you know, melt your eyeballs. So this, I think, is maybe a little more subdued for an Imperial IPA, but I think it's good. I think it's well needed right now in the world of bigger and bolder. So for an Imperial IPA, I think this is an easy drinker, and it's got that hop presence, but I think the malt is pretty well balanced in there as well. And our second beer is the Raspberry Sour from 10 Barrel Brewing Company. Now, we've had 10 Barrel on here before. We had this is the Crush. It must be a series because I'm pretty sure the other one's a Crush on as well, is their Cucumber Sour. So this is the Raspberry Sour. So as you might guess, it's a sour ale made with raspberries. Comes in a 12-ounce can. Comes in at 6.5% on ABV. And yeah, it's tart, it's sour, and there's raspberry. I think it's actually, as far as sour beers go, and you know, we've been warming up to them in the last half year. You know, kettle sours may be a little slower than maybe the traditional style, the traditional approach to these beers, like a Starkeller. But I think this is pretty solid. The raspberry is definitely there. That initial burst of sourness definitely hits you, but on the second, third, fourth sip, it kind of just levels out, and I think it's a nice drinker.
Yeah, it's definitely, the sour is there, puckers you the first time you have it. I like the raspberry, though. I think that balances it well, kind of gives it some flavor, but that flavor lingers. I had a sip earlier, and I waited a little while, and that flavor just kind of hung there. So if you're a sour fan, I think you'll enjoy this. This is definitely, you know, we talk about the summer beers, the lawnmower beers. If you like a sour, this is good. If you're not a sour fan, it might not be quite what you're looking for, but definitely hats off to them. I think they do a pretty good job. Like you said, we had the Cucumber Sour the last time around. Good beers.
Yeah, and this was an all-Oregon segment because the Deschutes is out of Bend, and 10 Barrel is out of Bend as well. So not only Oregon, but Bend, Oregon. So good representation from that corner of the country.
Yep, and hats off to Sean for sending it over. And if you want to try either one of these beers or any of the other beers we've talked about on previous shows, they can be conveniently found at Firehouse Liquor, south on Highway 3 in Dundas.
Look for the fire truck. Now we have the great fortune to come from on-site at the wonderful Tillian Brewing Company in Cannon Falls, Minnesota. As we noted at the top of the show, we've got a kind of a special show today. We've got Cannon Bell's cheese, and we're doing a pairing with Tillian Brewing and their wonderful beer. So we're going to kind of be all over. We got a lot of faces here at this table, so I think we'll start with kind of a round-robin introduction. We'll start to my left.
I'm Kathy Huff. I'm from Randolph, Minnesota, and I became a part of this cheese business out of the blessings of my two friends, Deanne and Jackie, and excited to be a part of it.
And I should have said, and what do you do there too?
I am the marketing person, or chief marketing person. So I was told that by Deanne and Jackie that because I can talk, that's my job. I didn't think that
low
was
bar.
Going to be my job, but that's
and you know everybody
in Randolph. That's not
well,
that
no. Just period. In Cannon Falls, Randolph, if any place we go, they always know a Huff.
Oh, there
and
you
so
go.
She's our in with everybody.
All right, and you are.
I am Jackie Oman. The cause of all this kerfluffle. I married a dairy farmer here in Randolph, and Deanne and I were making beer and wine together, and that wasn't, we couldn't drink that much, and we weren't that great at it. So I started playing with the milk from my husband's dairy farm, and we started making cheese and roasting pans in our kitchen just to see if we could do this. And 6-7 years later, it's a business, and we all kind of fell into the roles that we do. I do the accounting, keep the books of it, and then also the creative energy for different flavors.
And comedic relief, right? You did say
and
that.
And comedic relief when I'm not worth anything else.
There you go. Well, we're going to hear more about that story, so I look forward to that. About the business, not you.
I am Deanne Lufkin. I live in Northfield. I am the chief technology officer. I'm the one without a job, so I am the one that went to cheese school in Wisconsin, and so I'm kind of the de facto head cheesemaker.
Sounds like you're employed then.
Well, yes, but I don't make any money.
One day you will.
Yeah,
if you're making this great cheese, you'll do all right.
Yeah.
And we've also got a special guest from the host of the show today. We'll call you a co-host.
And I'm Chris Larson, CEO of Tillian Brewing Company. Thanks for having me back, guys.
Well, we're glad to have you back on the show. I'm glad to have you host us, so thank you for that. He says thank you. We had to move the mic back to me. We're a little short on mics today, so he nodded in agreement. So I think we always like to start with our brewery guest kind of at the beginning because it makes sense, right? And brewing stories have some similarities. I'm sure small businesses in general have similar stories about the genesis. So let's just start there. You kind of alluded to it earlier. 7 years ago, you're making some beer and some wine, and you found out you weren't very good at it.
No, that wasn't... we had fun, but it wasn't...
We're more like bad alcoholics. We couldn't drink it before it went bad.
Yeah, and it takes a lot... Yeah, it just took... We never got into the fine art of it. It was not something we were, able to keep up with, and I don't know.
So your drinking team has a bad cheese making problem? Is that
yes,
how it goes?
Something exactly.
Like that?
Yes. That's it. Yeah.
We want to leave it up to the pros like Chris to do the beer.
Yeah. But Jackie and I and Kathy all met 11 years ago. We're in a women's philanthropic group called PEO. And so we all met there. But Jackie and I, about 10 years ago, actually went to the Cannon River Winery to one of their cheese and chocolate days. And we talked to one of the cheesemakers from Wisconsin, asked how hard is it to make cheese, because we both loved it. And she said, oh, it's too hard. Don't do it. Don't get into it. And then
no
she
competition
left
then, right?
Like, okay. So it took a few more years before we decided to try it. And so when we did, we just started out in the kitchen, and we started giving it to friends and family, and they really liked it. And it was actually our Gouda, I think. We really like the Caves of Faribault's Jeff Select Gouda, but it's expensive. And so we made a Gouda, and it was really good. And so we thought, well, we could do this. But I have a degree in meteorology.
I'm a youth director, church work by trade, so... That has nothing to do with cheese.
Or dairy. And so we needed that dairy knowledge, and we knew Kathy has the dairy knowledge. So it was about 2 years after we started it, we were at a function, and we asked, hey, Kathy, we're thinking about starting a business.
I'll do it.
No hesitation.
Yeah, no.
So this is about 2013 then?
Yeah.
Roughly?
I've been in the dairy business most of my life. I was a dairy farmer for over 20 years, and so... I do have some experience in the dairy business, but it's a whole new world for me, being in the cheese business. Another side of the dairy world, but it is really fun, and it's fun to work with these two friends.
So you make your homebrew cheese or home cheese, however you want. Is there a technical term for that? Craft cheese at home?
Artisan. I don't even know. I would say hobby cheese. Well, we could call it farmstead because we made it on the farm.
Yeah, we started out as a farmstead
but
cheese.
But that makes it sound a little too professional.
Sure.
Because the cheese that we made, we couldn't sell anywhere because it wasn't pasteurized, and mm-hmm. we made it out of the house. So it's not like people that can sell their own vegetables they grow or jams and jellies that they make in their house.
Right.
So we then had to figure out, okay, how do we make this? Because we had to prove ourselves before we started building our own plant. So we had become members of the American Cheese Society. We went to about a dozen different cheese plants throughout Minnesota and Wisconsin and just picked their brains for hours and hours on end. And they all the Minnesota cheesemakers recommended that we go to the University of Minnesota.
Well, even because there's more creameries, dairies per capita in Wisconsin. So when we go over there and visit, it was pretty much the thing to do. To start a cheese business, you really should rent another person's facility on the days they're not making cheese. So it'd be like Chris renting out his brewer equipment the days he's not brewing to other breweries to help him get started. That's just what the cheese world does. They'll be willing to rent their facility. But where we live here in Cannon Falls area, there is no cheese facilities close by. So there was not really options. So
because we couldn't rent Wisconsin cheese facilities because you have to be a licensed cheesemaker, which is super involved.
And Minnesota doesn't have
those. They take
it
seriously over there.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, it's like getting a doctorate, the degree. It's crazy, the process. We don't have to do that, thankfully. Just have food handling license to make sure we're safe. But
And knowledge.
We have to have food knowledge.
Right.
But so the University of Minnesota was a great place to start because they have cheesemaking equipment, so we could start there. And we're working with a great cheesemaker, Ray Miller. He's been making cheese. His dad was a cheesemaker at the U before him. So literally his whole life, he's been making cheese. So he's just phenomenal to learn under. So we were able to take our recipes we had concocted up to him, and he helped us refine them. And we make cheese at the U then. That's what we've been doing for coming up on 2 years.
And as we worked at the university, from what we originally thought we wanted for equipment and processing systems, we completely changed our mind after working with the university and with Ray Miller. He really helped us hone our skills and point us toward the right direction as far as equipment goes too.
And this is probably where the story parallels a lot on the brewing side, that if you give away free beer or free cheese, everyone loves it, right? Your friends are over every Saturday because it's the greatest product they've ever had.
Yeah, we had a closed Facebook group that we would announce, we're making this many cheese curds, we'll have this many pounds of it.
Yeah.
When we started, we could make 4 pounds of cheese in one roaster, you know, like your grandma's turkey roaster.
Mm-hmm.
So we got 4 roasters and creatively placed them throughout the house so they wouldn't blow circuits. So we had cords running every which way in my house trying to figure out not to blow circuits, had 4 roasters going, and we thought we were pretty tough stuff. We could make 16 pounds of cheese in one day. That doesn't go very far. So we'd put it out on our Facebook group. We're going to have 16 pounds of cheese curds at the end of the day, and they'd be gone in a second.
It would be gone before we ever made it.
So we were like, we have a thing going. Now, looking back, we thought we were pretty tough making 16 pounds now. Yesterday, we made 600 pounds in one day. So a little bit of a difference.
And Chris could probably attest to that. Size matters, right, when it comes to equipment?
Absolutely. Volume matters.
So once you get over that initial response of a great response from your friends, when do you make the decision to move from a hobby to a legitimate business? Obviously, there's a lot involved. It's equipment. It's finding some place you can actually do it, as you just talked about. And then, obviously, the time, making it work within your lives, making sure financials work. How's that all come together?
For me, a big thing, Kathy and I sat on my deck and talked with my dad. And because he was willing to be a potential investor to get us started, to give us some startup money he said cost to rent a place. And so we sat on my desk chatting with him, and he's like, I'd really like to see you make at the U. Make sure you're one, you like making cheese at a big scale before you just build a plant and then make. And also find out if you like working together, because you've never worked together other than in your kitchen. So let's make sure you like doing this, and an initial investment of a few thousand dollars isn't going to be a big investment. You can find out from a few thousand dollars if you like making cheese together and if you like even making cheese, period, because we hadn't done it officially. So that was kind of... I was like, all right, well, that makes sense. Let's I guess we'll go up to the U and try making cheese and see if we like doing it. And
it was kind of like trying your first hit of meth.
Not that I would know.
You know, you just love it, and then you're addicted.
That's a first for the show. Maybe not the last. We'll see what we get on the show. No, we'll leave it in there.
But we were hooked.
Is that a future flavor? I'm just curious.
I don't know.
I definitely think with the pot, you know, with the pot industry, we could definitely make pot cheese. So, you
well,
know.
In a few years, probably for sure.
Well, actually, the American Cheese Society conference was in Denver last year, and that was actually a serious discussion between the California and Colorado cheesemakers, and they're trying to figure out how to incorporate pot into their cheese.
No way. So, John Peterson with Ferndale Market here in town, before we even made our first batch of cheese, said, yep, I'll sell your cheese. He just believed in us from just hearing our story, and just phenomenal guy. So that there's a few people like that said, you know what, we're going to back you and we're going to help you sell your cheese. So John's just been, we call him the godfather of our business, because he's just been giving us advice and support through this whole process and selling our cheese. Obviously likes it. He still sells it 2 years later, so it was a good investment for him.
And we're renting office space from him.
And this whole city of Cannon Falls, I think, has been very supportive. They just opened their arms to us and are anxious for us to have a business up and running here.
Yeah, Kathy, you should tell them how we ended up here.
Yeah, that was my next question, because we've got two women from Randolph and one from Northfield. So why is Cannon Falls your home?
Actually, they reached out to us first. Keith Myers found us online before we were even a business and invited us to come and be a part of the Cannon Falls business area. And we went to one of their Grow Cannon Falls meetings, and it just kind of snowballed from there.
And Chris, you can probably speak to that a little bit. It sounds like from the early inception, from what you guys were doing, you guys had a good relationship with the city as well.
Yeah. The city's been really good to work with, and I think part of the grow that's kind of going on in here, they're attracting great businesses like us and like the Cannon Bells cheese. It's all good for the community.
As a Northfielder who hadn't spent much time in Cannon Falls, I mean, I really only knew because of the winery, but because of not only the show, just general interest, I know about because of Tillian, obviously the cheese. I mean, before we even thought about having you guys on the show, we were hearing about you. Maybe that's the good marketing going on. I'm not sure. But but within that last 2 years, that narrative has changed a lot because you guys are getting a lot of attention for the cheese you're making. It's not that you just happen to be local and you make cheese. You're making good cheese, and you're getting recognition for it.
Yeah, in fact, like I said, we're members of the American Cheese Society. And so we've been in existence 11 whole months when we entered our cheese for the competition.
Which the American Cheese Society competition is an international competition. It's kind of like the Academy Awards of cheese.
It's
for a big deal.
North and South America. So we entered our queso fresco into it really just to get feedback from these industry professionals on how should we improve it. Does it need to have more salt, more acid, whatever? And in fact, Jackie and Kathy were talking about changing it. I was like, no, we're not changing the queso fresco yet. Let's get feedback. And so I was there at the American Cheese Society, sitting there in the audience, and they were watching on live stream during this award ceremony, and they announced two creamers tied for third, and then there was second place, and then...
Back at our homes, we were watching on the computers, and all of a sudden it was our category, and they named the fifth, the fourth, the third, the second, and all of a sudden... My screen went blank. We went, no!
They were both at work at church, and both of their feeds died.
I heard first place Canton, and then it cut out. I'm like, what?
Canton, Ohio?
Yeah.
And my husband was with me, sitting next to me. I was actually sitting between my husband and Ray Miller, the plant manager at the U of M, who we put his name on it, too. So I just heard Can, and then my husband saying, go!
You won.
And so I just ran up there, up to the stage. It was almost like getting your high school diploma. You know, you get your little ribbon, and then you have to walk in front, and all the judges are in the front. And as I walk
still
by,
judging you.
They're all congratulating
that me. That gown's not working.
I had my cow print Converse on, and as I'm walking by, they're all congratulating me, and I was hearing that they get really excited about new people winning right away. It invigorates them more than hearing, you know, the same people winning all the time, which you kind of expect. And how do you expect three white girls from Cannon Falls to win in a Hispanic cheese category?
Olay.
Yeah.
But since that moment, it's really been fun to market our queso fresco. It's really taken off, and there's a lot of educating that's been gone on with the queso fresco because not many people are very familiar with it. But because of that award, it's given us some credibility, and people want to try it as soon as you say it's an award-winning cheese.
I've been doing Farmer's Market in Cannon Falls on Saturday mornings and sampling queso fresco, but a lot of people wouldn't even try it because they were afraid of it.
They thought it was spicy.
And just, they don't understand the name. But a couple weeks after we won the award and we had gotten an article in the paper, Ken Hagerty came by and took a picture and put it in the Cannon Falls paper. The next Saturday, I can't tell you how many people came by to say, well, we heard about this cheese, we got to try it, and we sell out when people try it, because rarely do you have someone try the queso fresco and not buy it. They just like, wow, that's a really good cheese, and then they buy it. It's a big education piece.
Well, this might be a good time to dig into it.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the process of cheese making. It's something Ira and I talked about on the way over. I'm really interested. And I want to talk about recipe development, because you've got a lot of different styles here. But we also want to try it.
Yeah.
And we want to try it with beer as well, because that was kind of the idea behind the show, is to pair the good beer together with the good cheese and see what works together. So we're going to let you guys take over, because we have no idea what we're talking about.
So we tried to do a little research. So for the queso fresco specifically, it's a very mild cheese. I like to say it tastes like a cross
between. It's almost all gone already.
Yeah. It almost tastes like a cross between a mozzarella and a jack. It's what you would typically find the shredded white cheese at a Mexican restaurant, but ours has flavor because we add cheese cultures to it. Because you really want your beer and cheese pairings to kind of be similar. So if you have a strong flavored beer, you want a strong flavored cheese, so like a stout and a blue. Because ours is so mild, we feel like a good wheat beer, a Belgian, a very mild beer. So Tillian's T1, the cherry wheat, too, is good with it. You know, when you get those fruit flavors, too. So the raspberry was really good.
Yeah, the
cherry wheat was really good. And what we recommend doing is eating a piece of the cheese. So you get the cheese flavor in your mouth because the beer disappears quick, and then drink the beer. So it really brings those fruit notes out more.
I concur. I swallow that through.
I really liked the queso with the raspberry peel. Mm-hmm. That was really yummy. And I'm a fruity kind of person. That's what I like.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah.
So that probably draws out that fruit flavor a little bit more.
Yeah, yep.
You're getting that from, Chris can probably speak to this, with the T1, though, that's probably the esters coming through on the Belgian, yeast.
I'm with you on the raspberry with that.
That
finish, like having the cheese and then the raspberry just comes in together with that. That's really a wonderful taste. I don't mean to backtrack real quick, but I have a hard time giving Keith Myers credit for anything. You know? being that he's a Cannon Falls Bears and I'm a Dundas Duke kind of a guy, old school rivalry there. But no, I'm glad to hear that Keith was part of getting you guys involved over here. So, but I can't hear the name and at least throw down some shade on that.
And Jim Altoff too, because the two of them together were responsible for getting us here.
So that was your star, and it was with Tillian's, I guess, one of their stars, right? T1's probably, it is one of the flagships.
Yeah, that's our bestseller hands down.
And it's T1 because it was your first recipe, right?
Absolutely.
So what else we got going here? We got a whole tray of cheese over there. What else
so
do you think
So we have a tray here, my lovely cow plate, but we have it with our block cheeses. So we can talk about those first and then
work
our way
walk through
curds.
Those. Yeah.
So there's one little piece of Gouda left because we've been eating, but we were pre-gaming. The Gouda, our Gouda is pretty young because we're not young, but we're a young company. So we haven't been able to really age it long enough to get that strong flavor. So it's a mild Gouda. We felt that wheat beers would go best with our young Gouda right now. So the Honey Vice or the Death Door Tart Cherry, again, it was similar to the queso. You could taste it brings out those notes. And then as it ages and gets older, a brown ale would go well with it, or the stout, because you're going to have that stronger, like I said, that stronger beer flavor goes well with a stronger cheese flavor.
I tried the Gouda with the English nut brown ale, the Little Cannon,
and it is
delicious. It really brings the nutty flavor, really blends well with the Gouda. That would be my pick.
I think we'll leave you that piece of Gouda, Chris, since we all pregame before you were able to.
As you all are tasting the Gouda, I'm eating some of the jalapeno curds, which I like our jalapeno curds, but they're not my top favorite flavor that we make. I like garlic, but the jalapeno curds go really, really well with the 2-day weekend. That's a, like, oddly, I don't know why, but it goes really well together. It just brings out fun flavors.
And that's the New England IPA that they get.
Yeah.
They have on here. And that's pretty new, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we actually just tapped that 2 weeks ago. And it makes perfect sense, though, because you have that spicy little heat from the jalapeno. Not overtly, but
yep.
It pairs really well with that pineapple orange citrus that comes off the 2-day weekend.
Oh, okay.
So the kind of made spicy, sweet, spicy citrus.
Wow. Yeah, so it goes well really, with...
You should try it. Here's the jalapeno.
It also goes well with our Bad Boy cheese curds, which are jalapeno, habanero, and serrano. So,
oh, baby.
If you want more of a bite, that's the one.
Well, that's what's kind of fun about pairing. Not that I'm an expert in it, but like you can find complementary flavors that are either contrasting or go together. You know, if you got something a little sweeter that comes through, I don't know, if you make a cinnamon cheese curd or something, and then have a sweeter beer like the Bliss here with a little coconut and vanilla in it. Or you go the opposite way. So if you got a spicy curd and maybe a little more of a balanced beer that doesn't have any of that kind of bite to it.
All right, so we can move on to our cheddars. We have our plain cheddar, and cheddars go well with IPAs. When I was doing research, one of the sites said you need to pair your cheese with like things, and because cheddar comes from England, you need to pair it with British-style beers. Hmm. So they recommended, you know, the nut brown or Scottish ale, things like that. But we really thought, like, it would go well with... an IPA, the summer, the Shandy, which your summer beer, when you have it, it should go well with that too. But it also goes really well with ciders, hard ciders, because that apple and cheddar just naturally goes well together. And then we also have with us flavored cheddars. We have a Painted Desert, which is a taco season cheddar, and a Tuscan cheddar, which is an Italian spice. And then we have an experimental cheese here made with microgreens of radish and mustard microgreens, but it sort of failed because you can't taste the microgreens. So if we run out of the cheddar, this microgreen cheddar tastes pretty much just like it.
Yep. And I was just trying the cheddar with the Psychology, the red IPA. That's really yummy.
I just had that too, both that and the Painted Cheddar, and they both taste really well with them. It's a good combo.
So it'd be a good
one
with nachos.
Any combo of beer and cheese is good.
Yeah, we're not finding any misses yet. So I don't know if that's good or bad.
I think we need to come to Tillian more often with some snacks.
There you go.
I did find on one website. I found this quote that beer and cheese are more intertwined than wine and cheese because beer is made from grains. Cows eat grains, not grapes.
Take that, Cannon River.
Yeah.
Well. I was going to say, just from a pairing option here, we have 11 different kinds of beer here and about 11 or 12 different kinds of cheese here. The combos of it, about 144 or less there. It's a,
do the old factorial. You get more than that. The 11 factorial.
Yeah.
I had to dig deep for that math reference.
Now, for Jackie's favorite cheese, the garlic cheese curds, a more hoppy type of beer, so a good American pale ale. That the hoppiness really complements a good garlic taste.
I just tried the cheddar with the Roger pale ale, and it really blended well together. The cheddar gives it some balance, some smoothness, and I like it.
Yeah, I just had the garlic cheese curd with the Roger, and it just melds together really well. It's there's a softness to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing a little bit that's from the beer, a little bit's from the cheese.
Yeah, that beautiful Chinook hop that's kind of overlaid against that garlic flavor. It's nice.
Yeah.
Exquisite.
So it's a natural pairing.
Cheese is making it come out of me now.
Yes, we're almost like wine snobs now. It has this oaky finish.
First factorial, then exquisite. I better go home.
Yeah, you need to go across the street. That's
doing this.
Pinkies
up.
Pinky
goes up.
And then we have our horseradish cheese curds. They're a very mild horseradish. And which one, Jackie, which one did you like with the horseradish?
We've been having a lot of beer and cheese by this point. I'm not real sure.
I think it might have been. Was it the Roger?
You know, I really liked when we had the cheese and then we paired it with that beer. Roger.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the beer and then the cheese.
You guys do good work.
Again, another IPA, a good hoppiness.
Unlimited options here, really.
And again, the bacon curds will go wonderfully with any cheese.
They go with numbers there. 1 through 11.
Soon to be 12, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah, the garlic went really well with the Roger Roger. I can attest to that.
Yes, anything we've missed? Yeah.
We have Dillon Ranch that we haven't opened. Those are.
I just want to make sure you mention. I wasn't trying to say open them, but you know, I'm not going to turn them down.
We gotta open them. Honestly, the Diller, my favorite. We started. Like Jackie is our developer of our curd flavors. We first started with just dill weed, and it tasted like you're eating long clippings. So then we found a company in Wisconsin that makes their own dill dip mixes. So we added a dill dip mix into it. And so those other spices that complemented the dill brought it out more.
Mm-hmm. I'm just enjoying getting a chance to try all the cheeses because, as you've talked about, you're both in Cannon Falls and in Northfield at the local Saturday morning art festivals and stuff. And the last time I was there, I think I had to wait for a whole family. They kept, you'd almost reach for a sample and they'd somebody come darting in and you have a hard time. Like,
you gotta tell them you're not Costco.
You're trying to like, you know,
can't make those return trips.
Just even get a sample of one or two, much less all of it. So this is wonderful to be able to actually try across the board all the cheeses here.
At your own time, Lane.
And it doesn't hurt that there's a bunch of beer with it too. So,
well, you just mentioned one commercial partner. You guys are starting to expand that a little bit. We know we were at Tanzenwald recently in Northfield, and you guys are doing some work with them.
Yeah.
Talk about that side of the business where you're working with other businesses.
Yeah, our Painted Desert and our Tuscan Cheddars are working with Gardenaire, a company out of Rochester that does their own spice blend. So it's and we really take care. We really choose our ingredients to be just the ingredients, so there's no preservatives, additives, things like that. You want to talk about talking with other restaurants and things?
It's been exciting for us to get into different stores. We're currently in about 18 different locations right now, and one of them is Tanzenwald Brewery in Northfield. They use our Gouda and our cheddar in some of their dishes that they make, and it's really delicious. They use our Gouda in their Spätzle Delish dish, which is delicious, and it's been fun being part of that local restaurant scene and knowing that they are supporting our local business as well. And we're also in a winery up on Parley Lake, or in Waconia, called Parley Lake Winery, and that has really taken off in that area of the state too. It's so exciting for us to be broadening our marketing area.
Yeah, with working with Parley Lake, and that was by going to Savor, which was a Minnesota Winery Association festival, and we were on Fox 9 with them. And so they had said they just wanted to add cheese and needed to figure it out, but because we were so new, we said, we'll package it however you want. So we do little quarter pounds of our cheeses here in Ziploc bags. So now what they do is they have crackers for sale and then these quarter pound cheeses, and it's on a farm, and so they have people can go and have a picnic, sit in the grass on the farm with a bottle of wine, a bunch of cheese and some crackers, and off you go.
Or Tillians could have cheese plates they could offer.
Yeah, right.
And people could come in and have a beer and they could buy a block of our cheese at Tillians possibly.
You did read my email.
Yes.
And
we have stuff for you.
Well, and that's actually was going to be one of my questions is you see a growing market in breweries for pretzels and cheese and beef sticks. So that looks like that's a great opportunity for you guys. Obviously, Tillian makes sense because of the geographic area. But I know you guys are in Just Food Co-op as well, correct?
We're in Just Food. We're also at Ziggy's gas station.
Ziggy's, so.
And here in town, we're at Altoff Hardware.
They bought a refrigerator to carry our curds right by the keys.
So are those your three big retail partners?
No,
right now?
In Ferndale.
And I bring it up so people know where to get your cheese.
Yeah, Ferndale Market in here in Cannon Falls. It's funny how wherever we go, people know Ferndale. Like, he has got such a big business. People know Ferndale. But no, the bigger stores, I'll let Kathy talk about.
Some of the other stores that we're located in, we recently got into some more Hy-Vee stores. We're in Rochester, Hy-Vee, Oakdale and Owatonna Hy-Vees. We're in Coburn's and Hastings. So it's very exciting for us to get
all
into.
Short drives, too, right? From Randolph.
Yes. We're also in Rough Acres in Faribault. They're a little local grocery store. Super fun. They were actually our neighbors at the Northfield Farmers Market for a while. So that's how we got to know them.
We're also in a co-op in Apple Valley called Valley Natural Foods.
That's a really nice one,
It is a beautiful place. Yep. And Spiral Foods in Hastings. So we're getting into more of these co-op type stores.
Stillwater.
And Stillwater as well. River Market in Stillwater.
That's downtown, right?
It is, yes.
Well, I want to make sure we take a little time to talk about the process. I think a lot of people are, at least Ira and I base everything we do on the show based on our own interest. Who else would we actually talk to?
It's your show.
We don't listen to audience participation or anything like that. Really curious about the process of cheese making. We talk a lot with brewers and their different approaches to brewing, but we're really curious about cheese making.
We get milk and add stuff and have cheese.
Yeah.
Yay.
That's simple, right?
Yeah. Anybody can do it.
Well, just don't let it mold too much.
Comedic relief. Yeah.
Cow milk, right?
Yeah.
We do all cow's milk. It's actually not too dissimilar from beer. It's fermenting.
Right.
So we have milk and we add cultures to it, various cultures depending on the cheese that we're making. And so you let those cultures grow, kind of like yeast. And after the milk reaches a certain pH, which I hated chemistry, and now I'm taking more pH and titratable acidity and ugh. Anyway, so you measure the acidity, and that determines when we add the rennet, which is the coagulator. To make it a solid. So you add that, and it takes about 15-20 minutes. And once it's at the proper state of solidity, we get these curd knives, and we cut it into about, not quite half inch, about 3/8 inch cubes. And then we'll cook that within the whey itself for a while to continue that growth of the cultures in it, because those cultures give it a certain flavor. And then the next steps depend on what type of cheese you're making. With cheddar, we would then drain the whey off of it, and they become these slabs that we would then stack and flip often. And that flipping process and stacking process is called cheddaring, and it gives it that flavor and texture. And then once that's done, that process is done, we mill those slabs. We put them in this big machine that cuts them into about half inch by two inch columns. And then we add salt, and that shrinks them down and makes them look like this.
A normal cheese curd.
A normal cheese curd. With Gouda, it's a different process. Queso fresco is much faster. Queso fresco means fresh cheese. So we put those in what's called a cheese hoop, or the big metal rectangular things, and then we put them in the cheese press and let the queso fresco sit for about 4 hours, and then pull that out, where cheddar would sit overnight in the press.
The whole process of making cheese takes about 8 hours every time we make cheese. So we start about 8 a.m. and we leave the university about 5:30 in the afternoon. So takes quite a while.
And then we package it. So, and in fact, it's being tested right now, making sure we're not giving anybody E. coli or any of that. So once the testing, we want to get the results.
Priorities, right?
Yeah, we'll get the results tomorrow or Friday, and we'll then pick up the cheese and package it back here in Cannon Falls. So all of our cheese is packaged in Cannon Falls.
So at 8 hours, you're doing 600 pounds?
600 pounds.
But it takes 8 hours to do 16 pounds or 4 pounds.
You're right.
That's what was discouraging. We spent 8 hours.
No, we would spend 12 hours.
And it make the same amount of cheese. It doesn't matter how much milk. It's the time and temperature. It takes the same amount of time no matter what. So that's what's nice to be able to make a large batch at a time now.
So if you do a curd day, you can do what, like 1,500 bakes, roughly? I was trying to do the math. They're coming in about 6 ounces a piece.
I don't do math.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Not
yeah,
chemistry.
But it depends, because not all of that.
It's more of the art of cheese making, right?
Sorry, as the finance person, yes, I do math.
Not all of those 600 pounds are in curds. Some of that cheddar we make, because this is cheddar cheese that's fresh.
Well, so, like yesterday when we made cheese, we made 500 pounds of cheddar. 145 pounds of it went into curds, and then the other 450 pounds went into block cheddar. So we didn't, yeah, so there's 6 ounce bags. So, you know, 150 times 16 divided by 6, that's what you'll get for amount of bags of cheese.
7.
Okay, yeah, sounds good.
7 very large bags.
Factorial.
So obviously the business is growing. So how often are you needing to make cheese to keep up with the demand?
Not often enough.
Yeah, we because the U is a test facility for lots of businesses, we can only get in there about once a month. So right now we make as much as we can once a month. So that's why we're making 700 pounds of cheese every time we go. So we're making once a month, and that's what we can do right now. That's what they have time for. So we can sell cheese up to 600 pounds, and then after that we can't. Kathy can't go out and market anymore because we can't make any more cheese. So that's what we're working frantically. Besides making, packaging, selling cheese, we're also working really hard at getting our building space put together here in Cannon Falls, which within the next year we should be up and running and making cheese in Cannon Falls, so you can come see the process, and then we can make as much cheese as we want to our heart's content.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap up here, I want to make sure we give Chris a few minutes. Thank you again for hosting us. Really appreciate it. It's been about, 4 months since you're on the show? So you guys have been open since St. Patrick's Day weekend, right?
Yeah.
So how's it been going? It's been almost four months in.
You know, we really can't complain. We're on like batch 20 already, you know, after.
So people are buying your beer.
People are buying beer. Yeah. It's been a ton of fun. It's everything we thought it would be and a little more.
So batch 20, how many different recipes? Obviously, you got your staples, but I haven't been here maybe a month or so, and I see quite a few new ones.
Yeah, it took us about 4 months to get all 11 taps kind of rounded out, and I think we've maybe done 15 different types of beers in that time, plus we have a firkin every Saturday at 1, so it gives us a chance to play with some of those standards. Like the past two weekends, we did our T1 first aged on peaches and then aged on blueberry. Then we got two-day weekend coming up, aged on passion fruit and then on pineapple. And
I was trying to come up with a good reason to come over when you were doing the T1 on peaches, because that just sounded really interesting. And I'm like trying to come up with a good
reason.
Yeah, trying to convince the wife to get over here.
Yeah, well, it went quickly.
Do you think you'd ever age your T1 on maybe some cheeseburger cheese?
No, but I'd serve it next to cheeseburger cheese. Yeah.
So we're inching toward midsummer here already. It's July 7th when this airs. Things people should look forward to from you? Any new beers? Any events you might be hosting?
Yeah. Coming up, we have kind of the rest of our summer beer. We have a Kolsch coming up, which is just kind of your standard German-style clone Kolsch. Great summer beer. We have a Belgian Blonde, which is our first kind of big over 8% beer that's coming up. And then towards the end of summer, we have our French Saison, which is brewed with lavender and lemon zest. So definitely a different twist on the Saison. And that's before we get into Iris Pumpkin Beer in September. So
I feel like there's a name that we could work on with that.
Yeah.
When you do the Imperial one, you can name that after me then.
You got it.
All right. Chris, Deanne, Kathy, Jackie, thanks for joining us. I think this mostly worked out. We'll see how it turns out in the edit, but it's a little cumbersome. We have four mics for six people, so we like pulling back the curtain a little bit and let people know, and obviously we're doing it in a live brewery, so that's got people coming and going. So, Ira, how's it on your end?
Oh, good. And, yeah, we should maybe get a picture posted of the amount of samples of beer and cheese all across this table. We're at a long picnic table that could probably seat eight, and it's a crowded table here with everything we got on.
And I see that we have more work to do, so we should probably sign off. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Cheers.
Hey, it's Andrew Burns, and for this style of the week, we are going to talk about smoke, specifically smoked porter. Now, what makes a beer smoked? Well, it's actually pretty simple. The malt, or the grain that's used to make the beer, is smoked. You actually put the kernels of barley in a smoker, just like you might smoke barbecue or smoke fish or cheese, and cook it a little bit to impart a real woody smoke flavor. Now, Scotch drinkers are really familiar with this because the malt used to make scotch is a peat-smoked malt. And some brewers have taken to use that peat smoke, but actually more common are things like cherry wood or oak or hardwoods like you might find in food. So if you smoke a little bit of malt and put it into your recipe, you can transform any beer into a smoked beer, but that doesn't mean that any beer would taste good with smoke. What American brewers have found is that the porter is a fantastic base style to add a little smoke. You've got a little bit of a rich, chocolatey coffee flavor that really goes well with that toasty wood smoke flavor. And this is another one of those beers where a little bit goes a long way. Just a hint of smoky flavor can really elevate a basic porter into a special occasion smoked porter.
That's going to be a wrap on this show. Thanks to Jackie, Kathy, and Deanne
with Cannonball's Cheese for joining us and letting us sample some of their tasty cheese and giving us a rundown of their business and kind of what their ambition is and where they're going. Also, thanks to Chris and the gang at Tillion Brewing Company for one, hosting us, two, for supplying the beer, and three, just for being good dudes. So we had a really good conversation. Got a little chaotic there with six of us trying to share four mics. Ira, I know you had a great time editing this show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, and we can't forget Scott. You know, Scott was there, man in the bar, and sending samples left and right all over the place. So it was a lot of fun.
And he was kind of dictating some of the pairings too. He's got a culinary background, so he was kind of giving us some advice about how this may pair well with something, and the bells all came prepared too, so it worked out really well. Hopefully all of you listening kind of learned something. I know we did, and in the end, like we said during the show, I think we said this during the show on the air, was drink what you like, eat what you like, and if they go together, you'll find out. And
oh, yeah.
Even if they don't, then you can enjoy them separately, but you don't know until you experiment and try those things. So in large part, a lot of things will probably work well together, but occasionally you're going to find that match that's just, you know, just transcends flavor, and just it's just, you know, exciting stuff.
Oh, yeah. They had so many fun different ones. I mean, I was going back and forth with the horseradish or over to the paint, or, you know, obviously
the garlic curds.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And you know, yeah, there were so many good ones. And, of course, you know, you brought another pack of them out here right now, the Bad Boy, the hot jalapeno ones. They're just such a tasty, spicy curd. And so they're well worth looking out for.
Well, I was going to say, we ate quite a bit of cheese the other day, but I felt so good about what I ate and how I feel in my life with my body figure. No, I'm just joking. I wanted to stop and support Cannonball's a little bit more, so I stopped over at Ziggy's and picked up a pack before coming over here to share with you. And I did get the Bad Boy, which you had shared with me before. And yeah, the jalapeno, the serrano, the habanero. I like the heat. I think you like the heat. You may have done it more for protection reasons, so others won't eat the cheese in your house, but I like the heat. I'm not sure I should have had it right before coming on air and waiting for my voice to kind of give way, because I could just feel it bubbling in my throat, but so far so good.
Well, yeah, and then I was going after the garlic ones while we were doing the interview, and I'm glad that I didn't have to go talk to a bunch of people after that, because there was a lot of garlic in those and stuff. So, no, it was a lot of fun. You know, the only problem was trying to reach over everything, because I don't think I've ever done an interview with that many things on the table, because there was, you know, samplers of beer. Everyone had samplers of beers in front of them. Yeah. Everyone had the beer list. They had the cheese list. A whole plate of cheese, bags of cheese everywhere. So it was a little bit of a controlled chaos. But
you're not complaining, are you?
Oh, no, not at all. It was just funny as you're trying to reach over and not hit the mic.
Not pull cords.
Yeah, and get a hold of
somebody.
Piece of cheese and everything else. Well,
yeah, it was great. I'm glad we did it. We had been talking about doing some kind of pairing show for a while, and it made perfect sense to start there. And maybe down the road we'll do something more elaborate. Maybe work with somebody to do kind of like a dinner pairing. So you've got, you know, 5-course meal or something, and pair with beer. There's places that do those throughout the state, and we'll have to just identify someone in this area who's willing to host us and bring us along for that, because I think that'd be a lot of fun. So thanks to all those folks for putting together with us what I think turned out to be a pretty fun show. Looking ahead, we've got a good show coming up on July 21. That's going to air 11 a.m. here on KYMN Radio 95.1. That's with Spiral Brewery, a new brewery in Hastings. They opened up back in April, so they'll be about 3 months into business, so it'll be kind of fun to catch up with them, see how they've done. You and I have both kind of been in there a couple times. I know you went there for their media day before opening, and I got to stop in. I know you've been back, so it'll be kind of fun to catch up with them and see what's going on. That's going to be another big group, I think. They're going to have a few people, so hopefully that turns out well as well. If you don't catch it here live on KYMN Radio, you can obviously catch us online at ontapnorfield.com. That's got a list of all our prior shows. We're about 36, 37 deep now. We're pre-recording some of these because of the holidays, so it's hard to know exactly where we are in these numbers, and I'm not going to look.
Yeah, well, this one was show 37. I do know that. So
38 will be Spiral. So you can find 36 plus the one you're listening to right now on our website, waiting for you to listen to them. You can also find them on podcast platforms like iTunes, Player FM, Google Play, iHeartRadio, and a number of other podcast platforms. So that's good for on the go. I know you and I both listen to podcasts in the car when we're driving. For those who are more active and like to run, that might be a good opportunity for them. That won't be me doing that. But you have those options out there. We're also on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can find us at ONTAP Northfield. on Facebook and Twitter, On Tap with Corey and Ira on Instagram, where we post a bevy of photos, occasionally videos. You know, we post photos from events we're at, just places we were visiting. You're at Giesenbroy recently. I was at Prize. We get around. You know, we try to have fun and pretend we know what we're talking about. So we take pictures to show that research in action. So follow us on all those places. Leave us a couple comments. Leave us reviews on iTunes and other places. Helps people find us. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Cheers.